I see my presentation, my written presentation was disseminated. So I won't really go through it because it's already per se quite boring. So I will try to summarize, let's say, the national experiences and go back to the previous presentations in order to give, let's say, the Italian perspective to the problem. Well, first of all, the using of the American legislation to punish traffickers and protect victims might lead to a kind of a misunderstanding. The local mafia organizations are not really connected, tied to the dynamics of trafficking human beings, first of all. Sometimes we found out that they might be quite disappointed about human trafficking, meaning that especially mafia organizations in Sicily, they do have a quite a low profile strategy in carrying on their own business, their own legal business. So the concentration of so many police forces and investigations in Sicily, because in Sicily we do have most of the cases about human trafficking, migrants smuggling, having to share the territory, the control of the territory with other criminal organizations, foreign organizations, is quite disappointing to them. So they would be quite happy if we never had, I mean, this kind of phenomenon, criminal phenomenon tied to migrant smuggling or trafficking of human beings. Having said that, I can only say that the only kind of link that we detected between mafia organizations and foreign organizations dealing with migrant smuggling and or THB was when I was working as a public prosecutor in the south, in Puglia, where the local mafia, let's say, did share some agreements with the foreign Albanian organizations, dividing up the territory and dividing up the coasts where the smugglers, the Albanian smugglers, would be allowed, I mean, to transport their clients, let's say the migrants, that was the only kind of agreement that was detected between the local mafia and the foreign organization. Other than that, I can simply say that since 2003, 2009 and then 2014, these three pieces of legislation related to enslavement and THB were transplanted into a structure, a legal structure, that would give, let's say, special powers to police forces and the prosecution offices in order to tackle mafia organizations and organizations dealing with smuggling migrants and in the THB. That was the same strategy that was used for terrorism. This doesn't mean that the mafia organizations are tied with terrorist organizations. Two different types of phenomena, two different types of strategies, same investigative strategies. The anti-terrorism legislation was transplanted into the structure, into the legal structure, enabling law enforcement agencies to exercise special powers in the investigations and the prosecutions against the mafia organization. That's it. This does not imply that in some cases the case law, the Supreme Court, as well as the district courts, found out some similarities between the strategies of the mafia organizations, the local mafia organizations, and the foreign organizations dealing with THB and migrant smuggling, especially with THB. Once one of the strategies used by this organization would be identified in the widespread intimidation of the victims and of the other members of the organization. Once one of the strategies would be identified in the very strict hierarchical structure of the organization, once one of the strategies would be identified and found in the control over a specific part of the territory, of the national territory, by these organizations. Well, in this case, similarities would have been found, and let's say these non-local mafia organizations, these organizations dealing with THB, would have been successfully prosecuted and tried and convicted on the basis of mafia charges. Article 416 bis of the Criminal Code, membership to a mafia organization. So it's a matter, let's say, of strategy, it's a matter of tools, but it's not a matter of identification, cooperation between the local mafia organizations and organizations dealing with THB. So this is, let's say, the national picture. What happens with the legal structure that was transplanted into the existing structure related to the fight against mafia organizations? Well, first of all, we do have one centralized judicial authority, Direzione Nazionale Antimafia, having the power to coordinate the law enforcement agencies being placed in the 27 district offices all over the country. So I would say that almost every region has one or two district prosecution offices dealing with organized crime. So this is the, let it be mafia crime, let it be THB crime, let it be terrorist crimes. So 27 district prosecution offices, which is something that was a little bit, let's say, retrieved of the French legislations when they established the JIRS. JIRS in French are only dealing with, let's say, organized crime other than terrorism. In Italy, we do have also terrorism in the jurisdiction of these 27 district prosecution offices. Direzione Nazionale Antimafia has not only the power to coordinate the activity of these law enforcement agencies, but also, let's say, to issue directives in order to make this activity more efficient. Let's say, quite recently, we had a meeting in Roma, in the premises of the Direzione Nazionale Antimafia, trying, let's say, to establish new strategies in the fight against THB and the smuggling migrants. I mean, no surprise if I am, let's say, talking about these two phenomena at the same time. Again, it's they're different phenomena, but I would say the first investigative approach in Italy is always looking at smuggling migrants. Then, during the development of the investigation, then we might add, let's say, new charges related to THB. But looking now at the current dynamics of the entry of migrants in the country, the first investigative approach is always looking at smuggling migrants. But more or less, I would say the investigative strategies are the same. The strategies related to the fight against THB are just a technical development of the strategies that are used, I mean, for to tackle the smuggling of migrants. This meeting was inspired by the current situation. The situation that the country is facing, I mean, has been faced for at least the last 2 or 3 years. After, let's say, the Arab Spring in Northern Africa, after the turmoils and the political situation in Syria and Iraq. Through the Mediterranean route, I mean, thousands and thousands of migrants have reached the Italian coast, especially the coast of Sicily. And I can give you some figures. For example, in 2014, more than 170,000 migrants reached Italy. So 170,000 potential victims of THB, 170,000 pursuant to, unfortunately, the current legislation, illegal migrants, people that are subject to prosecution in the country because they entered legally the national territory, not being citizens of the European Union. And among them, 25,000 juvenile migrants. So a huge right number of these migrants were juvenile. In 2015, until August, we did have more than 70,000 migrants arriving in the country. So definitely this implies a huge number of investigations, a huge number of cases being investigated and prosecuted, focused mainly in Sicily. Quite recently, looking at the dynamics of the arrival of these migrants, meaning that most of them need to be rescued in the national or international waters, what happens? According to the Frontex operation agreements, Italy identified the four so-called hotspots, four harbors, where the ships, national or foreign ships, rescuing these migrants would bring them and disembark them to the country. These four hotspots, three of them are in Sicily, one of them is Taranto in Puglia. This means that the jurisdiction and the investigation of the cases related to smuggling migrants and THB would be in the next future concentrated in these four prosecution offices. This means a considerable increasing amount of investigations. What does it mean? This means, first of all, a problem of identification. The problem of identification of migrants is the problem of the identification of potential victims of THB. Take into account that the identification pursuant to the Dublin agreements needs to be carried on through the fingerprints. The problem is that the current legislation prevents police forces from using coercion in order to get fingerprints. And I would say most of the migrants know that. Most of the migrants have been taught about this this difficulty for police forces. So most of the migrants don't want to be identified. Most of the migrants hide their hands in their pockets. So it's very difficult to force them to allow police forces, I mean, to get their fingerprints recorded and then disseminate all over Europe. I forgot to say that Italy is currently not so much a destination but a transit country. The other problem is the timely investigation. Timely investigation implies that we don't have to wait until these people are rescued and taken to, let's call them refugee camps or structures, premises that have been set up by the government or by NGOs in Sicily or in other parts of the country. Because in the meantime, even before, I mean, they've been, taught and forced not to tell the truth to police forces by the same smugglers, by the same traffickers that, for example, at the very first moment are rescued together with the victims, together with the migrants. So the timely investigation implies that once the rescue operation is being carried on in the national or international waters, Italian police forces should be enabled to reach the rescuing ships and immediately interview the migrants in order to identify the traffickers or the smugglers. But this implies, another difficulty. As I was saying before, the migrants themselves are perpetrators, because they are illegal migrants, and once they have been rescued and once they enter the national territory, they are criminally liable for illegal entry in the national territory. So, in principle, they cannot be interviewed without being assisted by defense counsel. You can understand that it is impossible, to safeguard this right when you have in only one day, I mean thousands, well, I would say hundreds of people being rescued, being transported from international national waters into these four hotspots. So the first recommendation that was issued by the Direzione Nazionale Antimafia is that the first step in the theory of the case by the prosecution offices would be, don't let investigate and prosecute at the very beginning for smuggling migrants, because in this case the migrants need, if interviewed, if interrogated, a legal assistance, which is impossible to be provided with. But the first theory of the case would be trafficking of human beings. In this case, the migrants would be the victims. As in their position of victims, they would be in the position to be interviewed as such, as witnesses, not as perpetrators. The first recommendation. The second recommendation would be, once the police forces cannot, or not enabled, or not allowed, I mean, to have access to, especially to foreign ships. Let's imagine, for example, a military ship for another country rescuing these migrants in international waters. In this case, the migrants would be in a foreign territory, not an Italian territory. In this case, the Italian police forces would be prevented from having access to that ship. To request and to sign special agreements, a special memorandum of understanding with the military and, of course, the government authorities of the country hosting in the own ship, in the own military ship, these migrants, so that either the Italian police forces are allowed to make their own investigation in that territory, or, let's say, the staff of that ship immediately tries to interview the migrants so that we can get timely evidence about, you know, the dynamic, how they arrived, how they, you know, they were recruited, how they, what was the amount of money that they paid, and so on. That was, let's say, the conclusion. Plus, let's say, the national carriers, the national ships carry on rescuing operations in these cases. Well, for national ships, the staff of the ship is enabled to carry on interviews. If it is impossible for the national police forces to have access to the ship. In this case, let's say the records would be considered as evidence that can be eligible as a starting point for an investigation on THB, taking into account the fact that the migrants were recommended to be interviewed without legal assistance. Take into account that if we provide legal assistance to these migrants, once, as it happens in 99.9% of the cases, these migrants don't have any financial possibility, I mean, to pay the legal assistance. The legal assistance, the costs of legal assistance fall on the Italian government, on the Italian Ministry of Justice. So this is the let's say the main point. As I said, theory, prosecution theory of the case, no more smuggling migrants by THB. In this case, migrants will not be perpetrators, but simply victims, and they can be interviewed without assistance, without any legal assistance. The other problem are the interpreters. I would say it took me a lot of time to learn and speak English. Italians are quite lazy about, you know, in learning foreign languages, so we don't have, let's say, many human resources in foreign languages. So you know, recruiting official interpreters and that can speak. And, well, you know, in the 90s, it was the dynamic was focused on Albania. So during the 90s, we really needed interpreters in the Albanian language, which was quite easy. But once, I mean, we do have to assist and interview people coming from a certain area of Pakistan where they speak Urdu and not even Pakistani, or other regions in Central Africa where they, despite they do have English or French as a, you know, national language, but they speak specific dialects. Don't even imagine what happens with China, and we do have migrants coming from China. Well, trying to find interpreters is quite difficult. Plus, and this is something that might be an indicator of how sometimes the organizations dealing with THB can be considered as mafia organizations. So it's quite difficult to have interpreters available to help the law enforcement agencies in these investigations, because these interpreters quite often, once they've been identified by the organizations, by the members of these organizations, they are threatened. Their families back home are threatened. We have, for example, to find some solutions in order to have the identity of the interpreters hidden, at least during the investigations, and try to avoid as much as possible that they have to come to testify in court. Because in this case, I mean, we might have problems because we don't have the anonymous testimony in the country. So once we do have a threatened witness, first of all, we have to, let's say, to give to the courts not the evidence, but at least some indicia, some indications that they've been threatened. And then we can ask for some specific procedural protective measures, such as face or voice distortion, the testimony behind a hidden curtain and so on, in order to, let's say, enable also the interpreters, I mean, to testify. And this happens quite often, especially when there is a dispute between the prosecution and the defense counsels into the, let's say, the correct interpretation of some statements that have been given by the victims. How the transplant of the, let's say, of the legislation against the THB worked? Well, pursuant to the 35/2011 directive, victims of THB are eligible to receive financial aid, psychological aid, medical aid. I mean, it doesn't matter whether they cooperate or not with law enforcement agencies. But additional protective measures, additional aid, additional financial aid, additional, let's say, permits of stay in the country are released to people who decide to cooperate with justice. In this case, victims, as well as former perpetrators, if, for example, they are convicted with a very, very severe sentence, if they decide to cooperate with justice in order to avoid, in order to get mitigating circumstances, in order to avoid, for example, once they serve the sentence in the country, to be expelled and sent back to their own country, where they might face sometimes another trial, another prosecution, especially if that country, that source country, does not recognize the principle of ne bis in idem related to the previous conviction in Italy. They might decide to cooperate. Well, the same legislation applying for the pentiti, for the collaborative justice of mafia, applies to people who decide to cooperate within the framework of THB or of smuggling migrants. In this case, they might change their own identification coordinates. They might change names. They might be eligible in any case to testify in court under specific and special, protection measures. I understand that once of the banning recommendation, sorry for the inconsistency of this statement, of the directive is to avoid, let's say, repetitive interviews of the victims. But unfortunately, also for, let's say, mafia cases, once we granted protective measures to the victims or to the cooperator of justice, in any case, they cannot avoid examination in chief and cross-examination when testifying in court. It cannot be avoided. Otherwise, the country would be convicted by the European Court of Human Rights, because it's an infringement of, first of all, of a constitutional rule that was issued in 2001. But then there might be an infringement of Article 6 of the European Commission on Human Rights. So what we try to do is, first of all, to have a kind of anticipated testimony, which is possible in the mafia cases, and of course this was extended also in these in the cases on THB. We might have, let's say, an anticipated testimony, meaning that victims of THB can be examined in chief and cross-examined, but in closed session, not in public hearing, in closed session, and then the records of their testimony can be tendered to the court once after the closed session is finished. Then we go to the public trial. Another remedy. We understand that the victims of trafficking human beings, also after they, for example, let's make an example, they are timely interviewed in the ship when rescued. They give quite relevant, important statements that enable the law enforcement agencies, I mean, to carry on the investigations. But once they've been rescued, once they've been located in some structures, in any case, they or themselves or their families are approached by the criminal organization and are threatened. So in order to avoid retaliation, they become, once they come to testify, hostile witnesses for us. So in order to avoid this, once we do have indicators that they've been approached and threatened, or offered money, because sometimes they are also offered money in order to change their statements before the court, we have the possibility as prosecution offices to tender to the court the record of previous statement given during the investigation and ask the court to use it as evidence. But of course, I don't say that we have to prove. It's not it's not the same threshold of evidence that is needed to have a conviction. But we need to give, let's say, sufficient indicia to the court that these people were approached, were intimidated for retaliation, or were bribed, or their families were bribed. So this means that this implies, let's say, an additional effort by the law enforcement agencies, and especially police forces and NGOs, to monitor as much as possible the life of these people in order to avoid, or in order to detect approaches, telephones, suspicious telephone calls by other people while being, in custody in these premises, in these NGO or governmental premises, while waiting, to testify in court. I don't want to abuse your time, your patience, especially taking into account that it's a siesta time. So. I don't want to be a perpetrator of a human rights violation, but you will see the investigation techniques. I mean, the list of investigation techniques that are envisaged. I mean, in our legislation, are related to THB. Take into account that although, let's say, controlled delivery in THB and undercover operations are not forbidden, they are never used. That was, a sort of ethical boundary that all the prosecution, all the law enforcement agencies imposed to themselves. take into account that, especially with controlled deliveries, we are talking about human beings, not about drugs or weapons and so on. For, let's say, undercover operations, we understand that these operations might endanger the life of the victims of THV, of the migrants themselves, and might, let's say, sometimes lead the police officers acting as undercover agents before, let's say, an ethical alternative on how to behave if, for example, while they're acting as undercover agents, crimes, brutal crimes are committed against the victims of THV. Should they intervene or not? Well, pursuant to our legislation, they have the duty to prevent the perpetration of serious crimes. But at the same time, I mean, they have to safeguard, let's say, the success of the operation. So, in order to avoid this kind of dilemma, we carefully avoid, I mean, this kind of investigation. One last thing I have to say, I of course appreciate, in these times, I mean, from my, let's say, experience as in as a former member of the Prosecution Office in The Hague of in the International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia, as member, Italian member, Italian contact point for the genocide network Eurojust, as let's say prosecutor currently involved in the in investigations and prosecution for terrorism cases. Plus, in my experience, I would say now previous, because I mean my next job will be a little bit different than my current one, but as I mean a prosecutor dealing also with organized crime. What happens? We need an holistic approach, but the holistic approach not only refers to THB. The phenomena of THB is strictly tied to terrorism, because looking at Libya, for example, smuggling migrants and THB might be, let's say, a source of financing terrorism, of ISIS, for example, of the local terrorist organizations tied to ISIS. I'm not saying that the migrants or victims of THB are terrorists themselves. Terrorists are too smart, and they, of course, they avoid, I mean, to carry on very, very risky and dangerous travels on very old ships so that, well, their life might be endangered. But terrorist organizations might take benefit, I mean, from these dynamics, first of all. So, looking at these cases, we have to give a look also at terrorist dynamics as well as of violation of human rights. I mean, migrants or victims of THB might be victims back home of serious violation of human rights. The families of Syrians, the women, girls and women coming from Syria or Iraq might be, or from countries from Central Africa, might be previous victims of violation of serious crimes against humanity, for example. Take into account that enslavement, forced prostitution, forced labor, also, let's say, fall also under the jurisdiction of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court, once they've been systematically perpetrated against a specific population or a specific minority. So we need a holistic approach. It's not just THB, it's always also the Rome Statute. It's always also terrorism. To your patience, the reading of the financial strategies that we do use against to fight THB, and also on the possibility that we do have to set up, let's say, not a criminal, but an administrative liability of legal persons being involved in these kind of crimes. Thank you for your patience, and sorry if I abused my time. Thank you.